Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast. We're here with two dogs and a lot of birds outside because the window is open. So,
yeah, it has been Icelandic for the last month and then just like last week.
It goes from
60 degrees. It suddenly became 60 degrees.
It goes from winter to summer and skips spring. I think that's like a thing that everybody complains about. It's March 21st, in case we're keeping track of the date. And I feel like we have stuff to talk about, but it's hard for me to remember what it is. So
we should we have two like we talked about the ACNA 2 and Believe Us 2 letter last week. So, and we have two corrections. One, Mark Rivera is not yet in jail. He's still being, his trial hasn't happened yet. But both sides of the ACNA 2 and We Believe Us 2 group, both groups agree that he abused people.
He will go to jail, maybe?
Who knows, but they all agree that he
did
that. But I said that he was in jail already, and he was in jail already.
Okay.
He has been in jail, but he's been released, and then so he's waiting trial.
He's not ordained.
He's not ordained. But they have a lay leader system in that diocese that you can actually plant a church as a lay.
Okay.
A lay leader, and he had more authority than you might expect for just a lay minister.
Okay.
But he wasn't ordained.
And then there was something else.
Because the letter, the We Believe Us 2 letter, like, was describing this kind of system where all families moved out to live together in the country and they're all near one another. And it sounded like a commune, but apparently it's not a commune. It wasn't a commune. It was just a bunch of people together, living together.
Well, I mean, everybody had their own apartment.
Yeah, everyone had their own thing. Okay. And it was in that, so the ACNA 2 sent out a response to the Believe Us 2 letter and sort of defending Joanna Rudenberg, but it wasn't, I don't think it was very effective at the defense. I mean, the reality is this woman did not disclose her participation in abuse to the wider public. She may have done so to like bishops and people within the investigation, but the ACNA 2 presented itself as this advocacy group for victims, and yet one of the actual victims has been victimized by Joanna, and she shouldn't be that person. Yeah. The guiding and directing the process of investigation. And so anyway, it was,
I got a nice letter from somebody who knows a lot about what's going on and said, but really isn't in a position to tell any of it to anyone, especially not me, but said it's helpful to see and hear you guys trying to figure it all out.
Well, yeah, because it's it is confusing. A lot of it's confusing. If you're not there, if you're not on the ground with the...
Yeah, and so we're just, like many people, we have no inside information, just...
Well, we have the information that has been given to us, but
disclosed.
Disclosed. But the reality is, you know, for months, everyone was thinking, was just believing everything that the ACNA 2 group said, no matter what, because you have to believe all women now. So it's nice to have. It's really good to have another perspective on what happened, and that only illuminates the need for actual biblical justice, where you don't just take what someone says and believe it without also having an investigation and evidence and the assumption of innocence.
It's so hard to help people through difficulties because there's always two problems. One, a person may be outright lying.
Yeah.
May just be lying. But then the other bigger problem, well, that's a huge problem. If you're trying to do something and then somebody just lies to you, a big problem is when you are lying to yourself.
Right.
And So I, one of the very discouraging things about where Christianity is right now is the maligning or the rejection of that single verse in the Bible, "The heart is deceitfully wicked, who can understand it?" Rachel Held Evans was always, you know, making fun of that verse, like that, her, you know, book that was published posthumously. Right, she spends time in that, which, you know, again, a little caveat that I don't, if I die suddenly, please don't publish everything on my computer because it's all garbage. Like, I know she was working on a book manuscript, but it wasn't finished, and they really should have just not done that because it obviously wasn't ready for publication. But so who knows what she would have come out to say if she'd been able to finish the manuscript. But in the part that was published, she makes fun of that verse, "The heart is deceitfully wicked, who can understand it?" Because, of course, that was told to her as a child, and she tried to believe it. But as she went on, she discovered she just couldn't believe it because, you know, that's terrible. If you can't trust your heart or who you are, then what do you have, really? And I thought that was so interesting because, you know, it is a tempered kind of thing. When you say the heart is deceitfully wicked, who can understand it? You have to balance that against all of the stuff that I've said about gaslighting, which is where somebody tries to knock you off your sense perceptions. You see something and somebody lies to you and says, no, you didn't see that. And so you begin to doubt yourself.
My heart is deceptive about all things, so maybe I didn't see this thing.
Well, so you can twist that, you know, people doubting themselves.
Yeah.
There's good doubt, there's bad doubt, and there's lying all around.
See, yeah, but I don't think that verse means you can't, like, you don't see evil.
No, I know.
The verse means you shouldn't trust your own emotions as viable guides to life decisions.
But people take, like Rachel Held Evans, take that verse to mean, well, you just can't know anything. You know, you're deceitfully wicked, so you can't understand. You know, that they say that's what the verse is saying. It's
they can devalue it. They can push it off
Whereas, if you know that you are a deceit, like at your core, you're a liar, like all of humanity, you're going to realize that sometimes you lie to yourself.
Right.
You're going to acknowledge that, and you're going to ask God to help you stop lying to yourself, which should help you stop lying to other people, you know. It's a little bit like the way that Glennon Doyle mischaracterizes self-sacrifice, a mother sacrificing herself for her children is the worst thing because, you know, then she's a martyr. Well, no, there's a lot of room in between being a martyr and sacrificing yourself for someone else.
I mean, the whole idea that you can't trust your inner self implicitly, I just said that's your touchstone of truth and reality, that flies against everything. I mean, the rise and triumph of the modern self is all about how the society has, our culture has worked to prove the opposite conclusion, that in fact nothing is more true than your own heart. Nothing is more golden and pure and wonderful as your own estimation of things. And the problem is not you, but the problem is everyone outside of you who needs to change their
way. Really amazing, because when everyone thinks that, and no one has to change, so
I was like,
you do get chaos,
right? Of course. But see, now it's interesting because, okay, maybe we're getting too nerdy here, but Carl Schumann traces that back to Rousseau, who says, you know, the inner person is the pure, moral, virtuous person that's corrupted by society. But his view of it was there was a common human nature, and there were common values that God implanted in every soul. And once you got rid of the structures that inhibited those values, you'd have a pure world. But now the idea of there being a common virtue and a common human nature is gone. So then you do get what you're just talking about, which is just everybody doing their own thing and justifying it based on their feelings.
And, so Rousseau didn't like he was living off of the, he was devouring the thing that helped him even have that thought.
Exactly.
Which is so depressing and terrible. Right. What were we going
to
talk about?
We were just going to make a few like quick corrections to our
ACAC thing. We just like dived into it. Well, okay, I find in the spirit of lamentation, it's not actually good for women when you don't have biblical justice. You're only going to get more abusive women if you get rid of objective and verifiable data that's investigated, and you don't just automatically believe everyone, because there are some women whom you should believe, but you have to figure out if you can believe them. You know, it's so terrible for everyone when you just throw away objective reality.
Yeah, it's kind of like what we were talking to someone over dinner 2 or 3 weeks ago. And she said, I really hate that. I can't listen to a sermon anymore and be convicted of my sins because I'm always the hero. You can't critique women anymore. Women are always, have to be the virtuous ones who are always the victim. And so you can't say they're bad. And that really is hateful toward their souls.
Because they feel, you know, I'm a woman, you can feel that you're bad.
Right.
And if somebody comes along and says, oh, you're amazing, you're like,
you're great, you're wonderful.
Jostle these two contradictory things together in myself. I wonder which one will win. And then, but then to preserve the illusion of goodness, you have to be so mean to everyone. Because you have to keep the truth very far away. And so then you're really miserable. It's a great, great tragedy.
Yeah, I mean, this is the idea that, like, the idea that women don't lie about abuse. I'm sure that in the vast majority of cases that you have people who are really abused who are actually telling the truth. But Joanna and the ACNA too has actually lied about abuse. The whole organization is guilty of this. No one was willing to, until this Believe Us Too letter came out. No one had the guts to question them, right? People didn't believe them, but no one.
Well, I don't know. Like, it sounds like the province didn't yes to them.
You're right. They kept them at a distance.
They kept them at a distance and have been having their investigation. Which is great. So,
like, but I'm saying, like, it was not publicly on Twitter. You criticize ACNA too. You have, like, not just the woke ACNA crowd coming after you, but you have, like, Jacob Denhollander or Rachel Denhollander coming after you. You get canceled by
other outside,
by everybody who thinks you never, ever, ever critique a woman or a claim of abuse, which is, again, you know, you're actually hurting the women involved when you don't do that.
I feel like that's such an interesting thing to have happen. At the same time, I'm going to have to bring it up. This young man wins the swimming competition because he said he's a woman. Like, so you really do have, like,
a... guy. He's like,
you really have,
he's massively huge, and he's not... He's physically, like, his...
Don't say anything.
Okay, he has not been surgically altered.
Into a eunuch.
Right. He's not been emasculated, let's put it that way. So he's still very masculine.
So, it's just, you don't believe those women. When those women in the pool, like, who are trying to swim and are like, hey, this is a guy, you can't believe those women.
Right.
You can believe a man who says he's a woman.
Yeah,
and so you can believe some women in some circumstances, but there isn't an actual believe all women. People say that, but that's actually not true, because some women are not believed. If they say the wrong thing or they run afoul of the trans agenda, like, You can't believe all women.
I am super happy though, because I think this whatever his name is, what was his name before he decided to call himself
William?
William Thompson thing. I think it's blowing everything up. You know, so many people are. It's so obviously bad and wrong. I mean,
but the other ones have been bad and wrong too. Like the person who beat the woman to a pulp, and the weightlifter.
But for some reason, they didn't take off. This is taking off. Right?
I love that those young women recreated the South Park picture. I thought that was really gutsy. I was impressed. But I guess, you know, people have to get to the point where they feel like they don't have anything to lose. Like they've already lost what they had worked for. That's what happened. These young women had prepared their whole lives for this race.
Yeah.
And so they've lost. They don't have any more to lose.
Right.
So they're willing to finally
say something.
And that's
another like myth I think that's exploded by this is the girl power myth. Like that, you know, girls are just as able to get into a fight as men and beat them, and you know, they can, the Wonder Woman kind of thing. Like all the movies now have this kind of flattened female character who's doesn't have any flaws. What's it called?
Mary Sue.
A Mary Sue, right? Who doesn't have any flaws, who's stronger than every male, or at least able to beat up every male in her vicinity. And, you know, she's just a hero, right? So then all it takes is one guy in a pool to just explode that myth. I mean, he's just destroying.
I mean, the problem is that people have grown up without siblings.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you were an only child, a girl only child, or you had one brother who always played video games, you wouldn't know that there's a difference between men and women, or your father wasn't around, you know. So the overall destruction of the family, just to sound like James Dobson, I guess, just channel somebody who everybody hates now, means that because one thing I didn't know when we had all these children was that, because I'm an only child, your identity, your sense of who you are, is given to you in large part, not just by your parents, but by your siblings, if you have them. And so if there are so many single children now, more than in ages past. If you are an only child, you don't know who you are. Because you don't have any siblings to tell you you're a girl.
And you haven't been beaten up by your siblings.
You haven't been beaten.
So if you should never happen, you haven't, like, you should never let your boy child beat up your girl child, but you know, it's clearly.
Well, our two teenagers got into an altercation a month ago.
Yeah.
Where the girl antagonized the boy, and the boy struck out, and he really had cause, but he was severely reprimanded for doing that. He lost his temper, and he's not allowed to do that. It doesn't matter how provoked he is. Really, really tall.
Right.
He's much bigger than her. And of course she yelled.
Yeah.
And say, well, don't antagonize your brother because he's so tall. Yeah. But you know, that's all really basic, and it's totally gone. And then, so you're a single child, you've watched tons and tons of Disney movies about how you're a Disney princess, but also you're awesome. And so I do think that there are young people out there who really don't know that there's differences between men and women.
Yeah, no.
They don't have an experience, it's not their lived experience.
Right, you know, it was interesting, someone in class yesterday was kind of, like, who hasn't been in church for ages, just was kind of saying this, like.
I saw that person. It's quite a tall person.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was saying, you know, well, they're, you know, finally society has progressed to the point that people who for ages have known themselves to be women or men, but have their bodies differently, now society's progressed to the point that we're able to help those people. And no, it was actually helpful to have that perspective in the class, because it was illustrating everything that Kaufman's
been
saying. Yes, it was like, okay. Well, I love the guy, but it was interesting to hear that. That said,
and with a true belief, like
I really believe this. It wasn't. So this is all. This has not been our. This is not Kaufman making up something,
right?
This is really where our culture
He's describing right. something that's right. real. Yeah. Well, so I do feel like maybe there's slightly more hope after this swimming incident. And maybe, you know, there's hope for the ACNA too, if people do sort of begin to stand up and say, hey, we do believe women. We do love, we do care for women. Like, that's a big, big value that we have. We don't believe in the abuse of women. And we don't want men to be miserable either. But there's ways to figure it out. So somebody wrote me and asked if we were going to ever say anything about John MacArthur and Julie Royce. And I wrote back and said, not yet, because there's only one. Julie Royce has come out with a long piece and is pretty sure of everything that she's saying. She
accuses MacArthur of disciplining a woman who was in an abusive marriage, and the husband was actually arrested later on because of his abuse of their daughter and of her. And she had a recording of John MacArthur disfellowshipping this woman, fencing the table, I guess, they're out of communion, and he said no, she can cut the communion, and we don't know, but that's, we don't know at what John MacArthur knew. We don't know any other side of the story other than what Julie Royce presents, and she's so maligned toward John MacArthur, and she has been for years, and she's been trying to find some way to destroy him. She posted like 2 years ago or a year ago an article about his massive wealth, right? he leads a church of 2,000 people. He's been in Southern California. You're going to get paid to live in Southern California, to have a house in Southern California. It's extremely expensive. So he compared to like the upper middle class, he's basically that there, right? And that's he's not like Joel Osteen or anyone like that, but she puffed up this idea of him being this grifter, and she went on about his watch that actually was a gift, which is really expensive, and so now she comes out with this story about him 20 years ago doing this thing, disciplining this woman who was abused. But again, we don't know enough. All we know is the accusation. Grace Hugh has not put out a response yet. And in fact, Phil Johnson, I think it's XO, he said there's an investigation ongoing with a lawyer called in to check out what happened. And so we're going to wait until that happens. We're going to wait until that.
I mean, it's horrible because it sounds, to say, okay, we're going to have an investigation and we're going to let there be time for an investigation, which is what the ACNA did, the province.
Yeah.
And then the investigation takes a long time.
Right.
That seems really mean. That seems like, well, how dare you? But you...
Yeah, people come on my Twitter feed. Why aren't you immediately... You should immediately be distancing yourself from... No. I'm not going to do that. Because I have great respect for John MacArthur, and I've learned a great deal from him. And he, you know, even if he did make an error in this, I'm not going to cancel him. You know, if he did this, he should have, if in fact all the accusations are true, he should come out and apologize, yes, and do what he can to make it better. But that doesn't in any way, to me, invalidate his ministry. There's all kinds of ways a senior pastor in a huge church like that cannot be cognizant of the facts and make a stupid decision. So I'm just not prepared to do that. He should take responsibility. If he did do the evil thing, he should take responsibility for it. But yeah, the, we're not canceling John MacArthur just because the woke crowd wants to do that, which is what's happening. Ever since he said, go home to Beth Moore, they've been after him. And Julie Royce, again, I mean, she just displayed her journalistic, I would say irresponsibility, but it's probably more like incompetence when she, just like 2 days ago, reported that Ligonier Ministries
disinvited him.
Disinvited John MacArthur from speaking. And it turns out, no, she had to find something that was discrediting to John MacArthur. So she found that he was not going to speak at the Ligonier Ministry conference where he usually speaks, and assumed that Ligonier, because of her reporting, had disinvited him. No, he was sick, and he's 80-something years old, and he also canceled another speaking engagement around the same time because he's not either. He's sick. Someone in the family is sick, and so he canceled the speaking engagement. And that's the level of journalistic integrity that Julie Royce has. She goes after people, and I wouldn't trust her any further than I can throw her. So yeah, we're not gonna throw over John MacArthur because Julie Royce says to.
Okay.
Was your friend wanting us to do that?
I don't. Okay. No, he was just curious. I mean, it's the same when you flatten everything, like you have to have. So I think it's so ironic. You have to have. Everybody says you can have non-binary gender, but then.
Yeah, you can be nuanced in your gender identity, right?
But then, like, most other things are just one choice.
Yeah.
You know, you can either have this or this. You can't have any of the stuff in between to figure out. Or that a person could be wicked. You know, like...
We were talking about this yesterday in class. Like, because I said, one of the questions I asked was, okay, Winston Churchill. I grew up thinking of him as kind of a heroic figure. We all knew, like, I was also taught that he had flaws. Like he wanted the English Empire to, the British Empire to continue. In fact, one of the reasons he fought the war was to preserve
the Empire,
the British Empire, right? He didn't want to give India and the African colonies liberation, freedom. He didn't want to do that. He wanted to keep it. He was a colonizer, right? He was raised in like the early 20th century, and or late 19th, early 20th century, and that's just, that was Rule Britannia. It was like the sun never sets in the English and the British Empire. That's how he was raised. But he also was an incredibly brave politician who stood up to Hitler and single-handedly, I think, saved Europe. And so what do you do with that? Well, if you're woke, you tear down a statue.
You cancel him.
You tear down a statue. Right? He cannot hold a place in history that's in any way sympathetic. And his truly heroic and the honorable aspects of his character can't be spoken of. Because if you think that Winston Churchill was in any way a good man, then you are...
literally
you're a colonizer like him. Same thing with like Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson, like Southern men who were incredibly sinful in their stance towards slavery. Although Robert E. Lee didn't agree with slavery, but who fought for a slave owning cause. You can't. There's no nothing good about these men at all. You can't. Nope. There's no...
So what's interesting is because right now, I'm seeing on Twitter, we have Putin and Zelensky. So we need to have a hero and a villain.
Right.
But it's hard because Zelensky is not a conservative. You know, like he is... if you've seen that he's like trying to have a one-party system and he's shutting down various kinds of media. I don't know if any of that's true because it's on Twitter.
I mean, who knows what's happening?
So it could be real news or fake news, but people are saying, well, he's a totalitarian and he's, you know, he's not pro, he's pro LGBT, right. Which of course Putin isn't. So that makes Putin good and Zelensky bad. And
it's see, now we, like, can say, Zelensky is probably a, what, maybe he was corrupt before the war. Who knows? I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, he's probably done some bad things and he's probably not a great guy.
He probably has like bad ideological stances on things. But you can also say at the same time, Putin is also very bad. Right. And he's a Christian nationalist, like uber Christian nationalist. So right. Which one do you want?
Like, at the same time, I think he's a brave. He's really brave. He's standing up against a massively more powerful nation, and he's leading his country in an honorable way. So you can say he's bad and good, and let's admire his good qualities while also not being blind to the things that he's done bad. Yeah. Same thing with Putin. He's clearly bought into the Mother Russia idea of Kyiv being the cradle of the Holy Russian Church. I mean, it's interesting because he's a KGB agent. I was reading an article that was talking about his religious devotion and how he really does believe that Russia's the new Rome and Kyiv is like recapturing Kyiv is like
getting Jerusalem.
So I don't agree with that, of course, but if you can put yourself in that person's shoes, you can kind of have a nuanced, maybe sympathetic view
of both people,
and
still then say, please stop invading Ukraine.
Right.
Like, let's not do genocide on the Ukrainians.
Right.
It's interesting. Here's a thought.
Yeah, okay.
Let's not do this.
So the woke-ish mind wants to see nuance in places where there shouldn't be nuance and wants to
see the gender binary
or the Bible, right? Well, yeah, okay. Paul says, wives submit to your husbands, but let's nuance that, right? Like, so I retweeted Beth Allison Barr's. It's just
you got blocked.
I got blocked, so I had to get a screenshot of it. But she wrote, "I cover Paul." This is a little tweet. "I cover Paul in chapter 2 of my book. You can download the chapter for free on the Baker website. But no, Ephesians 5 does not preach male headship. It literally says, wives submit to your husbands. As to the Lord." And then if you don't like the Ephesians 5, you can go to Colossians 3, where he repeats the same command. But no, it's just, we got to nuance that.
Okay, but also,
when it comes to, like, Winston Churchill, he's wicked and evil. You know, when it comes to white males, historically, they're just evil. It's just that there's no nuance to it.
The thing is, though, like, people who really want to think about what a biblical idea of headship is, that's quite a deep, interesting topic. And the way that it's cast, though, by Barr and others is this, like, dark, wicked. It's the same. It's wrongly cast, just like the heart is deceitfully wicked. Who can understand it? Like,
yeah,
that's a fascinating verse that really is true, but you can spend a lot of time meditating on it or studying it or trying to understand what it means, and it can work in you and help you to become less deceitfully wicked, incidentally. Same thing with male headship. Like, I don't like the word nuance, but there's fathoms of meaning about that in Christ and the church and how people function together. And you could learn and study and even conform your life to something that maybe you're trying to understand. But no, that is, they want nuance, but they flatten it first.
Yeah.
You know, first you roll a tank over it, then you try to, then you pick up the flat thing and say, look at this, now we're going to nuance this.
Yeah.
Which isn't actually nuance. That's not.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not. Anyway. I think I've said everything I wanted to say. Oh, no. I want to change the subject. Okay. Oh, do you want to read something
else? No, go ahead.
So we put our cat down on Friday. And I wanted to tell everybody about this cat. First of all, though, we put it down on Friday. We had to make a terrible decision, which we agonized over for. It's not like a quick thing. He's really been unwell for about, well, since Christmas.
Yeah.
And so we finally, he was in pain, he was blind, he was starving, and he didn't know where his box was anymore. And so we finally put him down. And by providence, I guess, we put him down on Friday, which was the day last year that my dog died, Ash. And Facebook wanted me to know. Facebook reminded me of my memories. I care about my memories. So I've had a really hard time this weekend. But so Bander the cat is, my mother posted this on Facebook. First of all, he was rescued out of a flood in 2006 as a kitten. And we adopted him because my mom had a kitten destroyed by a big dog. Mm. And she was grieving. So because what do you do when you're in grief? You get a kitten. That's what you do. So we got a kitten.
She was just visiting, and so she went off to
Yeah, she left Africa. The kitten here.
No, we had the kitten.
So we had the kitten, Bander, and then and he was a great kitten.
Yeah, he was really
But good. In 2009, we lost our lawsuit with the Episcopal Church, which meant we lost the church, the rectory, and all the money. And so we had to turn over our house that we were living in to the Episcopal Church. But as we were moving out, there were a lot of people coming and going. Bander the cat spooked.
I saw it. Someone dropped, they were carrying our washer out or our dryer out, and they dropped it.
And
he was like right there, and he freaked out and
ran away.
I thought he ran outside. He may have ran outside, but he must have come inside.
So we couldn't find him. So we had to turn the keys in. We had a series of weeks, basically about 3 weeks before we turned the keys in. So we moved out right away, but then for 3 weeks.
It's February. It's cold.
It was January.
It was super cold.
We went and slept with the door open in this sub-zero.
Hoping he'd come back in with food.
Hoping he would come back in, and he didn't come back in. Then we turned in the keys. There's a three-week wait. So basically 6 weeks. The Episcopal Church finally comes in and takes over the house. And they hear, it's not the whole Episcopal Church. It's like one person. The whole church didn't come.
The person who is renovating it to get ready to sell.
Hears some scratching in the wall. Calls us and says, I heard that you lost a cat. So we go over in that. It was finally February. It was so cold. We tear down part of a wall in the house, in the basement. And there's Bander.
With this guy. We didn't do this without
the Episcopal Church. Yeah. They helped.
They helped do it. And then there's Bander.
So I had to climb up past these splintered wood and nails and drag him out into the light, basically.
Yeah.
And after that, he was never really...
It's 2009.
Okay, yeah. He just... First, when we brought him home, he chewed off all of his own hair.
Yeah.
Then he overate for years. Yeah, he was really committed to his food. And he only wanted to sit, basically, on Emma. He hated it when she would leave her room. And he wanted to just sit on her chest and look into her eyes. And that went on for a lot of years. And then, but he was always reclusive and difficult and upset about things. So that's the cat that died. And he was a good cat. He suffered. So he's very nuanced because... He suffered trauma as a result of the machinations of the wider world, but he had to live within his own body the sins of other people, and it was he had a tough time. But now I hope
toward the end of his life, he was very he came out of his hiding, and he.
So this is what's been so hard for the last 2 months. We've had him sitting on our kitchen counter in a box. And when you walk in, he would just cry and yell because he was hungry. And nothing he ate ever
filled him up.
So he just would be there crying and staring at you and wanting to be pet. And wanting life to be better. So.
Well, now it is.
Yeah. So we dispatched him over the Rainbow Bridge, but
yeah.
There's no Rainbow
Bridge. The way they did, we went to the Humane Society.
Yeah.
And they gave him one shot to put him to sleep, which was...
Because we went to the vet, and they wanted us to go to Cornell.
He's 15 years old, he's sick, and they wanted us to, like, spend thousands of dollars to...
Exploratory.
Yeah, no.
Figure out what's wrong with him.
I could put him through that. So, this one shot put him to sleep, which was really nice, and they dispatched him, which was a better way to go than
letting him linger for another many months.
So, without understanding what's wrong.
Yeah. So, I'm sad, and I wish that the end of the world could come soon. So, maybe it is.
I like C.S. Lewis's idea that was it C.S. Lewis? That when animals die, they get, or when they, at the resurrection, maybe they don't, maybe their souls don't go to be with Jesus. Maybe they have soul sleep, but at the resurrection, they're more human in the sense that they have...
They can all talk.
They can all talk.
Some of them can talk.
They become human. And we become like angels, or not angels themselves, but we gain superior, consciousness.
Something like that.
Something.
I thought that was John Wesley.
Yeah, but C.S. Lewis, C.S. Lewis was riffing
off. Riffing off John Wesley. So, okay, well... I think we need to move on with our lives. So I'm sure we've answered all of your questions, cultural questions, biblical questions. Thank you for listening, and maybe we'll be back next week.